Seen a lot of change, been through a lot of pain. Some things are not the same as they were a year ago. But all will be okay, I move on each and every day. The past is where it stays, way back a year ago.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Wake and Make podcast, your favorite podcast that is directly related to the maker community. I'm super, super duper excited. We have our first guest from Finland, a good friend of mine and a good friend of yours. His first name is Antti, but I know I'm saying it wrong. So I want Antti to introduce himself. Antti, do you mind letting people know where you're from, what you do, and just kind of give people a little backstory of who you are?
Not at all. Hi, my name is Antti. My last name is Apajalahti, which Dennis understandably couldn't say.
No.
Didn't even try.
Nope.
I run a one-man business called Roihuvuoren Nahka, which is basically the area where I used to live when I started working with leather, and Nahka is leather in Finnish. So that's where the name comes from. Part-time leather worker, social worker by day.
That's awesome.
Family man.
You were a social worker too. That's super cool.
Yeah, I do that. Well, depending on the leather business, I work 3 to 4 days a week, usually 4, and then I awesome. Have one or two days for leather.
So that obviously takes priority, the day job, right? And you kind of have to do that.
And then, at least for the time being.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there a big leather community within Finland? Like, do you have a lot of friends? Are you talking to people kind of behind the scenes that are local to you at all?
It's growing all the time. When I started 2015, 16, there was only a few people who's doing like sort of the same style than I am and you are as well. There's been like saddle makers, knife makers, all that. It's very traditional in Finland. Shoemaking as well, but maybe not so much on wallets and bags. So, but there's more and more people jumping in, especially during the last year or two.
That's cool. I've been watching just like the same way I got into leathercraft. I started by watching videos on YouTube, just watching as like a fan of them, and then slowly got more interest until I got, I got a kit like most people do, right? And now I've been super fascinated with shoemaking. Like, it's something that I'm super, super like interested in. I'm watching all of those videos, and I started making leather sandals recently, and watching the shoemaking stuff is like, sandals are kind of right there in between shoemaking and what we do, like with the wallets and the bags and all of that kind of stuff. Like, it's difficult to make them, just the like order of everything that you have to put together and trying to make everything super tight and make sure that the glue has a good bond. And man, shoemaking seems so cool. I would love to get to a point where I can make really, really nice like dress shoes or boots. And it's so cool to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like if like making wallets is like level one, bags are level two, sandals might be 3.
Yeah, that's and, a good way to...
And boots are like level 11 or something.
it's such a good way to paint the picture, I guess. And I agree with you. I totally think like making a card wallet or making like a notebook cover or something like that, just to get familiar with how your tools work.
Yeah, it's fairly simple.
Yeah, and the process of it, then you start making more detailed wallets, maybe adding in zippers, and then progressing. And that seems to be the way that people get into it. Maybe even like starting with belts or something like that. And that's totally it, man. You after time and making mistakes for a while, you learn so much. And I think that that's interesting. So to kind of introduce how you and I had become, you know, friends or whatever, I think it started, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it was when I was putting my shop together, or I had it up, and we kind of bonded over our, you know, our studio space and our work areas, because I'm a huge fan of your layout and you take such great photos of your workspace. I just absolutely love it. How long have you been in that studio? And it's obviously a private studio, right? Because you had mentioned that there's also like band practice space near you.
Yeah, I've been here for a bit over a year. Yeah, we used to live in Helsinki for, well, I lived there for 14 years about. And just before last summer, we moved an hour north to a place called Lahti, which is a lot smaller town. So, and yeah, I found this beautiful place. It's an old furniture factory, just a 10 minute walk from our house. And In Helsinki, I had maybe like a 10 square meter room in a basement with no window. And then I upgraded to like 30 square meters with one wall of windows.
I think that that's so crucial for, at least for me, a workspace. When I put, I mean, we just have a standing shed. I put it in specifically for this to build a shop. But that was the one big thing, was having natural sunlight. I couldn't do, I'm naturally kind of a depressed person. And if I don't get, you know, vitamin B, it's horrible. Like, I have to be in the sun, at least for, you know, a small period of the day. Like, I could never live in a cloudy, rainy environment that only sees the sun. Yeah, well, I would still live in Finland, because I just think it would be awesome. Like, I love that whole area. And we might be refugees up there here pretty soon. So I'll come work for you and you can give me a work visa. How about that?
Don't go to Scotland.
No, absolutely. But yeah, so we kind of bonded over our workspace that led into a conversation centered around our interest in our music taste. And we kind of started comparing to bands that we listened to and started, you know, sharing music, whether it was through, you know, iTunes or Spotify or whatever. And that's something unique to, I think, our friendship, because I try to create that bond with pretty much everyone I talk to. And it just doesn't click with a lot of people. So it's something I truly, truly appreciate with you. I think it's so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was about like the meaning of a workspace, and it, for me, and probably as for you as well, it's like a place to zone out, to calm down.
Yeah, I think even just simply how you lay out your workspace so that you can create some kind of workflow. I know for me, everything that I have is exactly how that comes to be. Like, everything is completely like thought out in detail, where I want each tool to be, whether it's my clicker press or, you know, my leather splitter or my stitching pony. Everything has a space. Is that similar to how you have your setup? Not just maybe the artwork or the, you know, aesthetic of it, but how everything kind of flows together when you're in, for lack of better terms, like flow space, or like a flow kind of state of mind.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to have is like, work table big enough to have everything basically in around one table. So yeah, early on I decided I'm going to build an L-shaped table in the corner. So,
and it's massive.
Yeah, it's massive. And yeah, because a few weeks ago, I got two sewing machines and a belt skiver and all that. So, oh,
man, went on a shopping spree, huh? Did you win the lottery?
No. The thing is, this is a crazy story because a good friend of mine is helping one family to empty an old shoe factory with all the equipment you can ever imagine.
Oh my God. So, the luckiest man alive. You did win the lottery. Just a different kind of lottery. That's yeah,
so
oh my gosh.
I guess they're on like a long-term loan or something, whatever you want to call it. But yeah.
That is
need to
awesome.
Learn how to use them.
Yeah, there's plenty of videos. We live in the internet age. For better or worse, you can pretty much find out how to use anything that you need to use. And I know that's a topic that I definitely want to bring up is handmade, the term quote unquote handmade, and how we can bring machines into that, if that term still applies. I know my opinion for that has completely changed over the last year and a half, 2 years that I've been doing leathercraft. But we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Auntie and I are going to talk about that topic amongst quite a few others. So please stay tuned. We're going to take a quick ad break and we'll be right back. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. Thank you guys for holding through that ad break. So before we went to break, we were talking about machines in our workspace, if that's still considered handmade, even if we're using machines. What do you think? What's your opinion on that topic? Because I know it's pretty divided and people have different opinions about it. What's your opinion about it?
Well, I gotta say, for a long time, I think I was pretty strict what's handmade, what's not. But when you make enough tote bags by hand, you get that little idea that maybe a sewing machine would be a good idea. But last weekend, I actually had this conversation with a friend of mine. We were having this midsummer party weekend, which is a huge thing in Finland.
Oh, awesome.
Especially the last weekend of June, everybody fucks off to their summer cabins or the festivals or something. So we have a group that always comes up together on midsummer. I was having this conversation and someone said that as long as you don't put the raw material into a machine and the final product comes out from the other end, then you can call it handmade.
That's very interesting. I lean more that way than I did when I started, where I thought like, if I use anything that's mechanical, it's no longer handmade.
Yeah, if you use a clicker press.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're not the one that's cutting out each piece. Like, I was pretty militant at the beginning in my mindset. And I think it really kind of just shows an immaturity in the thought process, where you think like, if I can't take my tools and make the same products out in the woods camping, then it's not handmade. Like, there's that mindset. And I think everyone that gets into leather work, there is a period of that. And I think it's really, really natural and normal. And you're so excited to put the term handmade on your maker's mark or your branding for your business, anything like that. And you want to stay true to it. And when you see your family and friends and you say you make, you know, handmade leather goods, your expectations of yourself are so different than when you do it long enough. And like you said, if you sew enough belts, if you sew enough, you know, long wallets or, you know, bags or, you know, even tote bags, you realize that it's so inefficient. I'm going through that phase right now. And as much as I love hand stitching and I find it super therapeutic, and I also, I don't know, I like the look of hand stitching so much more, but it makes it so that my products aren't feasible for everyone, because the time that it takes to do that drives up the prices of your products. And it's a balance, you know. I really want to lower my prices, but if you're getting paid, you know, $6 an hour to make something,
it's not worth making.
Yeah, you can't live. Like, then it's a hobby again, and I'm trying to make this my business. So
I think that's the point where I think most people change their opinion when the hobby is about to become a business.
Yeah, 100%. That's the point. 100%. And I think if you, once you start getting into circles with people like yourself, you've been doing this a lot longer than me. And I always try to spend time with people that have been doing it longer. I think that that's a great way to live your life in general. If you're doing anything that you're passionate about, the best thing you could do is spend time with people that are better than you and that have been doing it longer. And every single person that I, you know, spend time with, even if it's, you know, over the internet and stuff like that, all kind of have the same mindset that we're talking about. Like, there comes a point where you can't afford to not have some kind of using a sewing machine. Even if you're talking about like couture clothing, right? Like one of one, like fashion pieces, they're not hand sewing everything. Even at that level, they're still using a sewing machine to put this stuff together. Like, cut yourself a break, people. Like, you can still use the term handmade if you're using a clicker press or a sewing machine or anything like that.
Yeah. And at least now I think that hand sewing is way easier than doing it by machine.
Really?
Because it takes a lot of practice, I would say.
It's relearning, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely. And like relearning also the whole process of doing something, because the actual sewing part is not the only thing you need to think again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure, just like when we first started as a hobby and we were doing everything hand sewing or, you know, hand stitching, is there's a lot of wasted material through the learning process. So I'm sure for you, when you're learning, you know, another skill within your craft, it costs money because you're going through material to learn this process, and you have to make mistakes in order to learn. That's just a fact. So
I can tell you, I have a couple of very bad looking bags on the wall right now.
Yeah. Speaking of bags, I wanted to bring it up. We were talking a little bit before, and you're adding some backpacks to your line. Can you speak on that a little bit? I have some questions, like follow-up questions for it, but I'm interested in how that experience is going and the challenges that it presents. So if you could spend a little time kind of explaining your experience with it so far.
It's a thing I've been wanting to do for a long time, but if you hand stitch everything and use like expensive materials, you're only gonna try things for fun a certain amount of time. Because a backpack, making a backpack, like the materials are like 100 euros or something easily. And then you spend 2 or 3 days to make it. So it's, and it might turn out shit, you know?
Yeah.
Might be terrible.
I think that is part of the process, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but it's directly to your point, and then we can kind of go. But I think that, that process is so natural, where you make yourself a product, whether it's a bag, whether it's whatever it is, a tote bag, or, you know, if you're making purses or whatever it is, you make yourself one for proof of concept. Then maybe you make two or three to hand them out to close people in your life. And yeah. people that you trust to be honest with you, even if it hurts your feelings, and get them to prototype those and tell you where the weak points are, then you can come into doing production. But the cost of making that happen is massive.
And the time as well.
Yeah.
If I have, let's say, 10 hours a week and I have a few orders to fill, there's not much time to actually do things for fun.
Yeah.
So now with the machines, I can try things faster. That's a big thing, and I don't have to compromise on designs. I can do rolled edges. It doesn't take me half a day.
Yeah. Well, especially with a Bellskiver, that's the next investment I really want to make. Is getting a Bellskiver, or hopefully working with the company that sends me out one, because those things are crazy expensive. It's insane. Super insane. But those videos of people using Bellskivers right now on Instagram are getting a lot of traction. So
that's really cool to see. That's weird. But I think it's a machine that no one else uses.
Right.
Basically, it's used for leather. And that's it.
Yeah. And it's a really, I think that it's a natural progression as you take your leather craft up. Like, I think that it's probably one of the last machines that you kind of buy in your arsenal, because one, it's super expensive. Two, time is sometimes easier to come by than money. And so you can hand skive everything but the skiving process in general, I think that you get to a point where you want to elevate the construction of your products. And that's one thing that really changes things, but it takes a while to understand the importance of it. And I'm getting there, finally.
Yeah. And I think you can design your wallets and whatever you do, thinking that you don't have to skive anything. You can do quite a lot without skiving. Ever.
Yeah, I have the last two years. I've been doing that. I've only started really doing skiving because of the thickness of leather that I use and the stiffness of leather that I use, that I want to kind of, well, any reason, or the only reason why you use a skiver is to bring down some of the bulk. And I want to stay on the topic of the backpacks that you're doing. And you know, what are some of the challenges that you've experienced through this, aside from, you know, cost and time? Like, is it relearning? Because backpack and purse patterns really kind of intimidate me. Like, the order of how you put things together to hide your stitch lines and all of that stuff it's not a beginner process, I don't think. I think it's something that is more advanced than even like amateur. What have been some of the challenges that you've experienced?
How I looked at it is that I've made quite a few bags over the years, different kinds of bags. And I don't use a tote bag. I don't use a purse, but I use backpack every day. So that's the ultimate item. I want to make I want to make a product that is, for me, a perfect backpack. That's the goal. I don't know if anyone else thinks it's perfect, but how I look at it, that's the goal. And the challenge is, I would still say the time is the biggest challenge, because Even with the machines, it takes a whole lot of time to actually build something that big.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you touched on a really important point where you said you wanted to make something that you would wear and that you would use. I think that that is really, really sound advice for people that are listening to this, because we're often distracted by friends and family that give us suggestions on things that they want, and they might be the only person that wants it. I think if you make something for yourself and you're proud of it and you show it off and you're genuinely excited about it, people pick up on that. Even if it's, you know, you're just sharing a photo or a video of you making it on Instagram or social media in general, your excitement will come through. And if it's something that you like and also something equally important that you like making, then you're going to be excited when you get those orders in, rather than like, man, I made this one thing that, you know, my uncle told me I should make that he wanted. Now people want it. No one wants it. And I don't even want to make it. Plus we're doing this because we enjoy it. If you're making things that you don't enjoy, go back to your corporate job, you know, cause we all hate that.
Yeah. And I'm at this point, I'm not starting my backpack journey from zero, because I made a few to try out, and I've been using one for maybe two and a half years now every day, and it's still holding strong. And it's because I have a good base to build from. But I want to do two different styles.
Are you going to release patterns for them?
Pattern making is my weakness by far. I didn't have any patterns for, like, I don't know, 2 years or so. I'm trying to learn.
I'm laughing because it's so relatable. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing because inside of my heart, I'm like, oh shit, we're the same people when it comes to that. Like, I'm so bad at like keeping track of patterns. Like, I have a whole drawer of just mix match things that I've like put on cardstock, or like I've transferred over to like plastic kind of pad. I use this like plastic stuff that you can reuse a billion times, but it's something that I've always kind of had challenges with. But I feel like when your knowledge of leather craft and your experience grows, designing patterns based off of previous things that you've done and failures that you've had really make pattern making so much easier. And something,
yeah, that's for sure.
Something else that I've realized that helps too is using graph paper and actual, like, if you're making a card wallet, put down the card that you're going to fit in there, and you know, just go two boxes on the outside or three boxes or whatever on the outside of that and draw lines, cut that out, put it on some cardstock. There's your pattern. Like, once you start learning, you know, once you don't allow enough steam or stitch allowance a couple times, you realize you need to add more. Like, you have to make mistakes in order to know what not to do. And I think beginners in leathercraft should be encouraged to allow themselves to make those mistakes, because it's a good thing.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that has changed since I started, because there wasn't too many patterns available. So I never started with a pattern. I started with a simple key ring that made a few. But then I, of course, started like searching up things and, well, decided I can make a wallet. So I made a I ordered some leather from eBay and didn't know what I was getting. Yeah. And made a bifold without any proper tools as my first wallet. It's not pretty, but it's a wallet. It worked fine.
So it served its purpose. But
yeah. And it's only a few months ago was like the first time I actually tried someone else's pattern, because they're available left and right now. And it's good fun. It's good fun because you can learn so much from other makers' patterns.
100%. And even if, like, I'm a firm, you know, Pablo Picasso has a really, really famous quote that says that Good artists copy, great artists steal. And I'm a firm believer in that. If somebody steals my idea or kind of the process and what I do things, I'm like, awesome, I'm influencing that person. Like, it makes me stoked. And to a certain degree, if somebody just like straight rips off the artwork that I just did, everyone that's within the community knows the work that I do, and they're gonna, the internet will do internet things and let them know. But at the same time, like, it doesn't really bother me. And you're right, I see people, I get asked all the time, do you have patterns for this? Like the sandals that I'm making, do you have patterns? And I'm like, if there's anything in the world that you don't need a pattern for, is sandals. Just trace your shoe and make a little like strap over the top. Like, there is nothing that needs patterns for that. But, absolutely. And I tell people
that's how I made my sandals.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally tell people that. I'm like, hey, like, I would feel super guilty if I charge for a pattern, because this is how you do it. And it really stokes people out. Like, I'm not trying to make there's other ways for me to make money off of the leather industry. Selling patterns that are the easiest thing for people that just need a little bit of encouragement in how to do it, that's all it takes. And the reason why I ask you if you're making the pattern is because I would love to make a backpack for myself. I would find it super challenging. And what I do, and I encourage everyone to do, I call it selfish Sundays. And not everyone is going to be able to dedicate a whole day to doing this. But I make something for myself, something that will challenge me, or make something for a loved one that isn't part of my orders. And it helps so much to gain. And I would, you know, I would love to try making a backpack for myself. And I doubt that I'm going to add that into my lineup, because that's hard stuff, man.
Yeah, but you can always make one for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the fun of it.
Are these backpacks part of your lineup already? Do you have them on your website? No, are you advertising them?
No. I've sold a couple, but
they're coming. How do you do your advertising? Do you productions of certain things, have an inventory, then have an, you know, X amount of numbers off of your website that you can sell and then replenish it? Or do you make each product individually for the customer?
Usually I do like each product individually, but at some point I started, when I'm making wallets, if I don't have it in stock, I'll make two or three at the same time. Or at least cut the parts, glue them, have them ready for stitching, so I can finish them quickly whenever I want to. So building a little bit of stock.
That is really, again, something I wish I would have learned a lot sooner, is having, or even for me, like putting similar projects together in bulk when I'm making them is a lot faster in retrospect. If I'm making three or four bifold wallets or three or four pairs of sandals or whatever it is, rather than doing each one individually, when you get into that rhythm of doing each part for each product, you get so much done faster. Even if you are hand stitching, you're hand stitching everything, so you kind of get into a rhythm through everything, and it just speeds up the process. And this is,
yeah, absolutely,
only something that I've really started doing recently. Even if, because I have this like this real loyalty to my client base, that when I say, hey, when you order and you pay, then you get put onto the waiting list. Like, I'm not going to skip ahead. Like, you're number six, your project is number six, and then reach out to them. Your project's number four. There's two more projects. But if there's three bifold wallets in that 10 order waiting list, I should just knock them out and get them the products. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that also builds up the quality of the products, because even if they're handmade, they're all a bit different. But when you make 20 card holders in the same color in a batch, you probably notice the differences. But if you make them one at a time, they're all good and perfect. Oh, and there's 20 of them. You see the little faults. You see the spots where you need to focus more.
Because you can compare it to the other products that you're also making in the same batch. And man, I can't believe how important that is, and something that I wish I would have put in practice so much sooner, because it is totally true. And I think that the people that are listening to this, if you're doing, you know, you get one order every once in a while, and you're kind of you're just beginning, and you're getting these products out to your friends and family, which is awesome. I totally think that that's rad. We've all been there.
Everyone starts from there.
Keep slinging your products to your family and your friends, because eventually, after year one, year two, they're going to go away, and you're going to need to have a fan base around your products. Like, really, really get as many of those orders in the first year or two. But if you're making one for your neighbor, actually, if you have the materials, make three, because all three of them are going to actually turn out better. And then you have two left over that you can ship out if someone orders it. Like, just get it done. Like, I think that that's really good advice.
Yeah. Do you remember the first order you got outside of your friends and family?
It all happened really, really quick. So at the time I was working at a retail, I was managing a bunch of different like retail locations, and I was doing leather just as a hobby, as a way to help me with my mental health. And the people that I worked with were incredibly supportive of this and saw like a real transformation in my personality in a positive way. And I would, you know, when you first start leather, even me 2 years in, what, 6 years in or more than that? You said, when did you start?
I think it was late 2015.
Okay. So yeah, that's 7-8 years in. So to kind of have that excitement still, I had it 10 times more. And a coworker was just like, man, the stuff that you're making is really cool, and purchase one. And I'm like, I sold it for $50. And I thought that that was like, oh my God, I'm going to quit my job. I can sell these things for $50. Even though it took me 2 days to make, I'm like, there's no way that I can make $50 every 2 days. Like, that doesn't make sense. So, but then it kind of, you know, you start making projects and start putting them up on your Facebook. A lot of your friends and family are going to be on Facebook, like really push in that beginning stages and talk about your story and why you're doing leathercraft, and you really get that friends and family. But then it was the first few orders that weren't friends and family, they were friends of friends, or there was somebody that was recommended from this guy, or the kind of word of mouth / internet kind of thing. And man, it was exciting times. I don't know the specific project, but I remember that time period so well, and being so excited and so like in a very good way, very proud of myself. And at the time, that was something that was really, really hard. That feeling of like pride in self was something that was really hard for me. And I was able to kind of learn that. Do you remember the first product that you sold that wasn't your friends and family?
I'm not quite sure. It was quite, I started selling, like officially selling products in January 2017, I think. And it caught up really quickly. Can't remember the actual first one, but the first one I remember was some like bespoke products for a guy who imports Pendleton and Stetson to Finland.
Oh, wow.
That was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely a time period that you should always really, really admire. And something that I found changed my ability to sell more to people I didn't know was advertising it to be sold. Get your wording right on the description. A lot of people didn't know that I was selling things until I said now available, or this product is for sale, or if you're interested in getting something made, please reach out. Coming up with a business name and logo should go hand in hand with your first sales. Figure it out quickly, because and change your internet presence from your personal presence to your business presence as soon as you can. That to me made all of the difference. Get your friends and your family that follow you on your personal Instagram or your personal TikTok or Facebook, all of those things, advertise your business pages on all of those and funnel them into it. Leave clickable links. People want the most easy way to find you. So clickable links is the most important thing.
And if at that point, if you're smart enough to make two wallets at a time, not one,
yeah,
you're gonna have a little stock, and it's so much easier to sell that I can ship it right away. It's ready. Just pay me.
Some people don't want to wait. Even when you have a even when you have experience and time in the game, there's people that do not want to wait a month, 2 months, 3 months to get a product from you. They're like, oh, okay, well, if you can't ship it tomorrow or within the next week, people are so accustomed to Amazon and getting things shipped out in 2 days or delivered on their front porch in 2 days that they don't understand that it takes time to make these. Like, it is handmade, whether you're using a, you know, a Bell Skiver, a clicker press, a sewing machine, you know, drill press, a Dremel tool, whatever it is, it's still handmade and it takes time. So I think what Auntie's saying is super, super good advice that I wish I would have heeded before, because if you make one product and you post it and you sold it, there's going to be a flood of people that want that product, because a lot of people do not want to make decisions. They want to point at something and be like, I'll take one of those. Boom. There you go. It's easy. It's shipped the next day.
And what people don't realize often is that the products they're ordering are made specifically for them. It's made for you, not for anyone to buy, if you know what I mean. I think you just a week or two ago, you had some Instagram stories about how you tag people who you're making the sandals for in the post, in the making of process. That was a good point. Like, it's made for them.
There's two really important things in doing that. And you're referring to tagging the client, the person that I'm doing the project in, putting their mention in the story post that I do, which is the whole process. Putting them in there does two things. It makes them a part of the project, and they feel like they're getting exposure in a kind of a special way. Like, you make them special. And two, again, it comes to clickable. They just have to click one thing and it shares it with all of their friends. Then you build up a fan base of their friends. And people want, I mean, even when you're working with companies and you're doing collaborations with leather supply companies, putting their mention name, you know, tagging them in your story post. I talk to social media managers all of the time for all of these businesses, and they all say that's the best thing, because they're getting free organic content that they just have to push one button and you're going to get exposure to their friends, and you're also going to get, you're going to make them special. They become part of the project. And if you pitch every project when you're making one-off projects as a collaboration between them and you, and they have creative rights and, you know, all of those kinds of things, you make people feel special. And it's easy to understand that if you've ever had that experience yourself.
Quite a lot of the time, I'm quite lazy with my posts on Instagram. So often I just do it like because I have to. And then I forget to do things. And then, like, if you go back and change things or add things, then no one's going to see the actual post anymore.
It's so true. It's so true. I think that that's a common feeling with the majority of people, is that they like making the products, but they didn't sign up to be their company's social media manager. I know for myself, I enjoy it. Like, I enjoy producing movies or, you know, little short videos and stuff like that. I enjoy it. But if I didn't, like, I enjoy making, I look at the production of a video the same way as I do a leather product. And it's a production, and it's its own product in itself. But talking to people through social media, I hate it. I hate getting into conversations with people. Like, prior to starting the business, I wasn't on any social media for like 5 years before that, because I just don't like it. Like, I don't want to get into arguments. Like, it's damaging to my soul, and you get dragged into things that you really don't want to be dragged into.
Do you get a lot of questions like, why is this so expensive? Why does it take so long?
No, I really don't. I will be quick to offer discounts. If two things, if they're giving me creative and artistic freedom, I try to help them out. If they're ordering in bulk, I try to help them out. Well, that's it. Those are the only two things that I can really think of. Or it's just a project that I'm really excited and I know that it will lead to a successful video, then I try to help them out. But I never am swayed by someone that says, oh, that's too expensive. Because in my entire period of doing this, I haven't had anyone say it in those terms. Like, oh man, that's really expensive. Or, oh, you're charging too much. Or, oh, I can get it from somebody else for cheaper, because I do my best to set myself apart from everybody else. I do a very unique style of leather craft. That's whether true. It's like the traditional tattoo style stuff, but there's a handful of people that do similar things, but there's a very, very small handful of people, including myself, that do it really, really well. And if they reach out to the other people that are doing it really, really well, I'm certain that they're not going to charge them any less than what I'm charging them. It's pretty universal, you know, that and doing,
they'll probably charge stuff more.
Yeah, exactly. Because they've been maybe doing it longer. They, who knows, a billion different reasons why they charge, or maybe they're charging a little bit less. That's their prerogative, but, or doing the portrait style stuff. Like, there's really not many people doing like realism in leather craft. So if somebody wants something like that, you can charge whatever you want to. And they can say, what I get more than anything else is, oh man, it's really beautiful, but that's out of my budget. And I can just be like, hey, I'm not going anywhere. Like, when you're ready and you do get the budget, please reach out to me, because I would love to do this project with you. And you leave that door open and they'll come back. You'd be surprised on how many people take an interest. What I get more than anything is the, you know, 3-page description of why they want it, and the sob story about how their grandma passed away, and all of these different things, which I'm a very sensitive and empathetic person, but I've never met these people. And it's really hard, because I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to get it for cheaper. And I haven't had the experience of people. I just get ghosted. If I tell them the price and it's too much. Yeah, and yeah. Just like they don't and reply. And I'm that's like, it. Okay, no problem. Eliminated that. Yeah, yeah, I'm not going to lower my prices. So
yeah, yeah.
Have you had that experience where you have people blatantly tell you like, because I hear it from other people. I definitely hear it.
Yeah, that's why I was asking, because I've never had that experience. It's more than like, this is too cheap.
Yeah. Then you know you gotta raise your prices.
yeah. But then there's the limit how much you're comfortable asking for a wallet or anything like. But yeah, never had that conversation that something would be too expensive, but people just stop asking or the conversation ends. That's what happened.
I think that the best way that I've told people I don't tell people what to do. They're all their own individuals, but the way I do it and the way I suggest people doing is charging how much you would be willing to keep it for yourself. So if you do a project and to you would personally buy it for $60, sell it for $60. If you'd rather keep it and not make the $60, then that's the answer to the price of what it is. If there's so many different formulas, like material cost, hourly rate, all of these different things, times 2 divided by 27, all of these different things. I'm not very good at math. I just charge what
you feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I have a price range from $30 all the way up to $900. So there's something for everyone if they want to support me. And I do have people that reach out that are like, oh man, I really want this and I really want to support you. And I'm like, oh, well, here's something similar that's, you know, $200 cheaper. And they're like, okay, I'll take that. Like always having that backup thing where you don't lose a sale, but you're also not undercharging what you determine your value is.
And the hardest part is when someone asks like a bespoke product, a big product. Like last year I made a satchel. I've never done a satchel before and started from scratch. I have an old one my mom bought in the 80s. It's hanging on the wall here. So that's what I used as a base to get some of the measurements and all that. And after I finished it, I was like, oh, this should be like double the price.
Yeah.
I sold it for like 500. It should have been 1200 or something.
Yeah. You know, that's that. Two examples of that is I've done that before. I look at a project. I'm like, oh man, this would be really fun to do. You charge what you think the final, even what the final product should be based off of, kind of material cost or whatever, what you find the value of it being. But what many people don't realize is you're not, you and I, because we're similar, we're not working off of patterns. We haven't tested this. We haven't gotten to the point where there is a flow of what we're used to with all of the other products that we make consistently. So you have one day of basically figuring out what the pattern is, a second day of trying to really think how this product is going to function, and then you make a prototype out of paper. However your process is, it takes 3 or 4 times as long as you originally thought, 100% of the time, guaranteed. Like it's always so much longer, because if for me, without a doubt, if I agree to a project like that, I'll get 90% done and it's just completely off. Then that will happen 3 times in a row. And I'm like, I'm losing money on this now, completely losing money on this. And yeah, it's difficult. And another thing, like you said, with big projects, I did a guitar strap with like 5 portraits on it. And that project really got me a lot of attention, and there was a lot of people reaching out, and I explained to them how much the one that they were coming to me because of cost, and it cost $1,000, and they're like, oh my god, like that okay, well, I'll get back to you when I can. And like, people are really shocked on a project taking 4 or 5 days costing that much. And if you can set yourself apart where there's only you or a small handful of people doing the style that you're doing, you can charge more, because people will look around to try to find people doing what you do, and they're not going to be able to find someone else. Very valuable. With that said, I kind of wanted to shift gears and talk about education and your experience with leather education and what that looks like in your world compared to my experience with it. So when did you get into doing leather education, and what does that look like to you?
I started, I think it was late 2019, I think, just before pandemic started. Yeah, so I had, before that, I've had a few friends coming over to make a belt or make a wallet, and it had been lots of fun. Have a few drinks, listen to some good music, make a wallet. Sounds perfect. So,
sounds fun.
Yeah, and yeah. Then I just threw out the idea, if there's anyone interested in like coming for a 6-person workshop or whatever it was, and it sold out like this. It was like 5 minutes and it was gone.
Wow, that's awesome.
Like, and they were all people I knew. But
yeah, you got to start with your friends and family, and no matter what you do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And that's how it started, basically. So I've been having like 6 to 10 people workshops doing wallets and belts.
And that's awesome.
It's been good fun. They're always fun. It's like, and I think the best part is that people come in with absolutely zero experience. There's might be like in a random group, there's probably one who has watched some videos, maybe one who has a actual leather belt.
What they get in return though is a portion of your experience. And I think that that's what the cost of these workshops really entail, because if somebody is going to watch a few videos, which videos can only explain so much, it's impossible to be hands-on. But if they go to your workshop, they get to harness some of your experience and kind of bypass a lot of those growing pains and the frustration. And if anyone can do a project and kind of elevate through that really quick, they're more likely to fall in love with the craft rather than spending a bunch of money making mistakes. And I think what you're doing is very special, because that brings more people into the craft. Even if, you know, you do 2 workshops with 10 people, maybe 1 or 2 of those people go on to really falling in love. And if not, they have a cool belt and a cool wallet that they can, you know, share with other people in their experience. It's no different than like those like wine and painting kind of classes. You know, a lot of people get an interest sparked from that. Yeah, totally. I think it's a genius idea.
I can make 6 wallets a day if I really try to, but I'm not going to sell 6 wallets a day. So it's also a good business.
Yeah, you're 100% true. There is, there's money to be made in education for sure. I think you should be to a certain point where you're actually providing value to someone before you start charging them, which obviously you are. I feel like I am. But I highly encourage anyone, even if you have a week of experience in leathercraft, immediately start charging. I'm sorry, not charging, but teaching other people how to do what you've learned, how to, you know, share the mistakes that you've made to help press. And through your career in leathercraft, naturally the universe will align and more people will be willing to share their experiences and their failures with you, and you'll progress a lot more. Not to mention, the best way to learn is to teach other people, big time.
You have to rethink every step to a beginner level.
Absolutely. And you got to be able to communicate that to someone else. When you're by yourself in your shop and you're putting something together, you don't have to explain it. Your brain is just going through motions. Like, to explain it to someone else, then I guarantee after you and I do any kind of education, when we get back into our shop to make, we've improved. Even if we didn't touch leather the entire time that we, because we better explain what we're doing. We can see the flaws that we had prior to going into that experience when we come out of it, because we're learning through the process.
While making wallets, I usually offer quite a lot of different leathers, different textures. And some of them are something I've never used before, because I might buy something that I'm like, I don't really know how to use it, what to pair it with. And then someone makes something really good looking out of it. And I might steal that idea.
Yeah, exactly. That's totally awesome. Do you do you have a regular schedule? Like, do you do once a month, or do you do once, every quarter or whatever? How do you arrange it?
One every 4 weeks from January to May. And then I had a few like private workshops in between, where someone reached out and wanted to organize something for a group, and that's even better. And that's one of the things I want to do in the future, is to try to sell it as a kind of like a experience to different companies.
Yeah, like team building.
Employees.
Yeah, kind of like absolutely. Team building things. Yeah. That's a fantastic idea.
Because it's. I can fit everything in a suitcase.
Yeah.
Basically. So I can go anywhere.
Yeah.
If they have tables, they're good to go.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's
what I want to do more. And it's also like the companies I've been working with have been like big, like marketing companies and that sort of thing. They have money. They have lots of money. They're not afraid to use it as a like customer gifts and like a private label products. That's also a good place to market those.
You're a genius, my friend. What you're saying is something that I understand, but I don't always get the opportunity to share every detail of what we're doing. But what you're saying is so so valuable to the people that are listening to this, including myself too. Like, I think I would have never even thought of doing it in marketing the educational side of things as team building projects, because I think people in the workplace are starting to demand more of better working conditions. And part of that is team building. I think companies are starting to come around to realizing that if you have happy employees, you have loyal employees, you see more of these like workspace kind of comfortable places to work. And I think that you're doing something that is super smart. I don't know how else to say it. It's just it's very, very smart. And I think that you're kind of ahead of the curve in that sense. And man, I can just see you having such great success with this. That's awesome.
I hope so. I hope so. But like, just a month ago, I was organizing a workshop in an office building, and one in the group said that they have done everything, and they were in the middle of Helsinki, and he said that they've done everything they can as like a team building experiences. If there's a new place offering something, they go there. But this was something completely new to them.
That's awesome. And I can totally see that, how that's true. In Finland, is there like a lot of, like, is that kind of a like a cultural norm that companies do team building? Or I'm just coming as an American, where it's really more like humans are assembly lines, and it's just, we're almost looked as just production. When you go work for a large company, they don't really like, in my experience and my understanding from the majority of people, is that you're just a product to a business. It's, you're a means to an end type of thing. It sounds very different based off what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say it's quite different. Different. Of course, it depends on the companies, on the field they're working with. If they can afford it, if they're in a place where they appreciate the expertise of people.
Right.
Because there's only so many people in Finland, and I would say there's quite a lot of big companies, especially in the marketing, digital things. I don't understand anything about them.
That's fine. You don't need to.
Of course, I can take their money.
Yeah, exactly. I'm happy. Pay me. But,
yeah, and I think they're fighting for the same people.
I like that. Like I said earlier, man, I'm going to have to come get a working visa from you, and I'll start working for you. That's the way to go, brother. I think of situations like that, and I would imagine that a company offering a lunchtime pizza party to a company that like got over their sales quota or whatever, that would be a team building or like a giving back to employees where, and I just can't see it being much more than that. Like no one's going go-karting. No one's going to go take classes, leather classes as a company to build team building. And I think that's really a cultural difference. Yeah, that's it's very interesting. I've had a little bit of experience teaching group setting classes where there's six people and you have to go over kind of a wide variety of skills in a short amount of period, and it's really hard to do that when you have maybe 3 or 4 hours to do a workshop and you're trying to teach them pretty unique skills. My experience and what I think is a lot more enjoyable is to work with, like within my private studio, have one or two people come over at a time and be really, really hands-on with them and be able to use my tools, give them all of the materials, all of the tools, and all of the knowledge that I can. And I think that you can legitimately charge a premium price for that, because
absolutely, yeah,
that's a lot that they're getting for that. Like tools and materials alone is something that they get to try out, rather than, you know, a $4 stitching iron that you get off of Amazon. You can use a pair of Cinebrocks that cost, you know, upwards of $300. That's a major difference. And I think that it's an awesome thing when you get to a certain point. Do you take private lessons in your workspace, or do you?
Yeah, I do. And so far I've been having, like, if I'm organizing something here in Lahti, we use our my workshop. And in Helsinki, I have a place where I can set everything up easily.
That's so rad.
That's good. But yeah, I had a private workshop maybe a month and a half ago. I got at some point I got a message from a guy who introduced himself, like, I'm a 35-year-old guy. A few months ago I got diagnosed with cancer and I'm in treatments and I'm pretty much stuck at home. I bought this starter kit from Amazon. I haven't even opened it. Can you help me out? Can you organize something? And I can bring a friend. So two guys from Helsinki drove over and we had a few hours to make wallets, and he just sent me photos of first products he made at home. So
how rewarding is that? Like, I have people that I've worked with and we've stayed in contact, and I'll get photos, or I see their, you know, Instagram or their Facebook, and it's not just their products, it's how they're starting to present themselves. And I kind of, the whole, like, leather crafter has become a portion of their identity and they're really leaning into it. And I'm the first one in their comments like, man, I'm so proud of you. Like, it's so cool to see this. Like, I don't think there's anything more rewarding than that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that that's awesome. Well, Antti, do you mind sharing some of the things that you hope to do in the near future and where people can find you, your Instagram, if you have, you know, any other social media that you would like to plug? We would love to hear it.
Well, social media, only on Instagram, Facebook. I think I'm too old for TikTok. I don't understand it.
Dude, you want to make bags? You want to make that money? Get on TikTok, yeah. My friend.
Yeah, it worked for you.
It did. I'm not going to lie. That app changed my life. I got it as a joke because they were going to outlaw it here. And I was like, oh, if they're going to outlaw anything that you're about to outlaw, I am attracted to it. So I was like, oh, I got to see what all the fuss is about. I got it and it changed my life.
Yeah,
totally.
But yeah, the plan is to have as many workshops as possible, teach as much as possible, and that would be the base of the sort of the base of the business, and then on the side make bags to sell, because even they may be like made to order, or I just make what I want and try to sell them afterwards. that would take the stress out of getting individual orders for wallets and all that.
I think that that's so awesome, because I have a feeling as soon as you relieve some of that pressure of selling products, more orders for products will come in just naturally, because that's how life works. Like, you'll relieve a lot of financial stress by doing what you know makes you money, right? Like, you can guarantee that. Then you can re-fall in love with leathercraft every time you get to do it rather than have to do it.
And that's, I had a period of maybe like 3 years when I had orders pending all the time. So every time I went to the workshop, I knew exactly what I was going to do. And when the point came that I didn't have any, that was the best moment of leathercrafting in a long time, to actually make something new or make something for myself or make something for my wife.
That's so funny that you say that, because this entire conversation, I keep laughing because it's totally relatable in what you just said, where there was definitely a portion of my recent career where I had like a waiting list of 6 months, and it felt good, but it was also incredibly stressful, because you know that there's people waiting nonstop and they're checking up like, hey, how much time? And maybe you get delayed a week because you had to do a repair, or this happened or that happened. And you feel this enormous sense of pressure. And it's nice to know that you have that money, and you can't do this for free forever. So there's that balance. Then same as you, there was a time period where I came to my last project and I'm like, oh shit, I don't got anything to do tomorrow. And my whole thing was, as long as I got a paid project to do tomorrow, I'm cool. Like, I only need one, and then another one after that, and another one after that. Like, you don't need to be booked out for a year. Like, that actually kind of sucks. So there was a time period, and just like you said, it gave me an opportunity to really prototype some different ideas and play with things and take risks and make things for myself and my friends and my family. And that ended up sparking a whole nother like rebirth of my brand, because I didn't even intend to, but like I made something for myself that I really enjoyed, and it turned out other people liked it because I was enthusiastic about it. And then you get a rush of orders again. And, you know, there is always that balance, and there is that feeling of excitement to be able to do something for yourself or just take a break. Like, we live in such a world, at least here, again, it might culturally be different, but this whole like hustle culture, which I don't know if the victim is a pretty strong word, but something that I often find myself in. Yeah, I fell into it in the sense of like, I'm very prideful of how many hours I work a day and my work ethic and, you know, how much work I really put into my business. And I feel guilty if I take a day off to go, you know, get lunch with my wife, or if I'm not in the workshop 24/7. And I've had to like really, really kind of step out of that, because it's a horrible place to be in your mind. And what I realize, anytime that I take more than 2 days away from my shop, I, one, get better at our craft 100% every single time, because I have the time away from it. I miss it. And it's like a relationship where when you come back to it, you're even more in love with it than you were before. And me and my wife just booked a 7-day cruise to like Mexico for our anniversary this month, or not, basically the end of July is our anniversary. And I have so many orders to get done that I can totally live this like hustle culture until I leave. And then when I'm gone, there's no phone reception, there's no internet, there's no nothing, and I'm so excited to get away from good. That
yeah,
I love it.
That sounds good.
That's cool. I think it's totally cool. Well, I know I got super long-winded, as I often do, and I'm learning to not apologize for being myself, but it's just a conversation, man. With that said, can you, I know you mentioned your Instagram, can you spell that out to people so they can look it up very slowly so that people can write it down? Because it might be a little bit hard for people to spell it out. And I want everyone to go check out your work, because you're not just a friend of mine, but I'm a huge, huge fan of what you're doing.
So Roihuvuoren Nahka is spelled R-O-I-V-U. I screwed it up.
It's okay.
So you're gonna, it's Roihuvuoren Nahka.
Awesome. Awesome. We got it. Wow.
Reminds me of a
easy.
Time I was, reminds me of a time when I was in, it was years ago, I was in London, and we were going to the BBC studios for a live show or something with our friends, and we had to give our names at the counter. And I was saying my name for a few times, and it was like, can you spell it for me? I spelled it, my last name, and like, can you spell it again? And I spelled it again, and she was like, whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever, get it. Go.
That's funny. Like, I would, if I were in that situation, I'm like, can you just spell it out the way that it sounds or the way that you want me to say it? Because for me, a big, I never want to insult somebody. And sometimes people get very insulted if you pronounce their name wrong. And that's never, ever my intention to ever, like, I don't know. I try not to like piss people off, right? It's a good rule of thumb for life. And no matter how, I mean, their name could be Mike. And before I try to start a conversation with them, I really, really try to get their name right, especially when it's something complicated. Not only that, but I'm horrible at reading and spelling. It's not something I was very good at.
And if you're not sure, you just try to wait, like you work your way around it.
Oh, absolutely.
not calling names.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny because prior to this episode, I always chat with whoever the co-host is going to be a little bit before and, you know, kind of get the tempo for the conversation that we're going to have during the podcast. And my workaround is always, hey, do you mind telling everyone your name and introducing yourself? That way the person says it the way that they want it pronounced, and then I make a mental note of it so that I say it the way that they want through the whole website or through the whole podcast. Awesome, brother. Well, we're going to wrap up this week's Wake and Make podcast. Thank you so, so very much. I hope you'll be a guest in the future. We can discuss more about your experiences through the courses you're going to be teaching in the future, as well as the backpacks that you're making. You've inspired me to dedicate some time to figuring out how to make myself a backpack. And I'll be asking you a lot of questions throughout the process, if you don't mind.
Absolutely not. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And I tell every guest that I have on the podcast, if you ever find yourself in California, specifically Southern California, you and your wife always have a place to stay. If you need to be picked up or dropped off from the airport, or you're just in the area and we can hang out, you're always welcome here. And if I'm out in Finland, which I know I keep on joking about being a refugee soon, I truly, truly would just go out there to hang out with you for a week. So it's a place that I want to visit so much. And, you know, those are the experiences where you make the world a little bit of a smaller place. And traveling is the best investment that we can make as humans.
That's absolutely true.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you very much. We're going to see you guys later. Have a good week, everyone. And we'll catch you on the next episode of the Wake and Make podcast. I appreciate you guys. See ya.
Way back a year ago.